Hello everyone, let's get started. Welcome to Lighting Up Your Site in Windows 8.1. I'm Jacob Rossi, I'm a program manager for the Internet Explorer engineering team. And I want to show you some of the ways that IE11 and Windows 8.1 allow you to take better advantage of the increasingly diverse type of devices that consumers browse the web with, as well as how you can take the opportunity to better integrate into how they use Windows to browse the web. So let me give you a little demo of what I'm talking about, what it means to light up. This is my Windows 8.1 start screen. I go here day in, day out. I get my mail. I see my updates from news sites, RSS feeds, the weather, etc. It's where I go to apps. It's where I go to sites. And in Windows 8, we gave you the ability to put your site here through Penn Sites. And in 8.1, we're improving that experience so that your site can have a first row seat just like apps, including support for the new tile sizes, from the small ones you see here to the very large, as well as live tile updates that work just like apps. We're also giving you new tools to take better advantage of the hardware. And that includes things like hardware-accelerated touch, panning, and zooming, as well as different screen sizes, resolutions, and browser sizes. There's ways you can plug into the experience, influencing how users share content from your website, and a whole host of new APIs I'm going to walk you through. And we're going to do a little bit of demo and some coding, and I hope that you'll appreciate getting to see how some of this works. So increasingly, devices have lots of different types of input. Touch is definitely at the front of that today. But it's not just a slab of glass, necessarily. It could have a mouse. It could have a pen. And so it's important for you to consider how your site works across different types of input devices, whatever the user finds themselves browsing your website with at the moment. And Microsoft's trying to make that easier for you through a new web standard called pointer events. This is one of the fastest web standards that we've worked on in recent years. It just reached candidate recommendation, which for those of you who aren't familiar with the W3C, signals its stability and it calls for additional implementations. Pointer events are available in IE10, and we've updated them in IE11 to match the feedback that we've gotten from web developers in using it. And they're really awesome. They work just like mouse events. You've got events like down, move, up, over, out. But they work for multi-touch, pen, mouse, and other pointing devices. So they let you share code across input devices when it's convenient. And they also let you differentiate between input devices when that's desirable. So you can take advantage of these in IE10 and IE11, and there's upcoming implementations for other browsers as well through open source work that Microsoft Open Technology is collaborating on with other browser vendors. You can learn more about the specifics of pointer events and get into the nitty-gritty details through the IE11 developer guide, which is available today, as well as webplatform.org, which is open documentation that describes sample code as well as details about how the APIs work. In addition to the APIs you use, there's some important design considerations to take into account when designing for a different array of devices, in particular touch. The first thing that you're going to need to remember is that your finger is not as accurate as your mouse cursor. And so what we find is that often standard link sizes can have failure rates as high as 30% for users casually tapping them. Now, IE tries to improve this using technologies called smart touch targeting that adjusts for inaccurate touches. But your site can go above and beyond that to make that experience extremely easy for users by providing targets that are simply big enough for your finger to accurately touch. We find that 40 pixels is roughly a good number to start with. And adjust based on the particular UI in your site. Another important consideration is that touch isn't like a mouse in that most touch screens today can't recognize your finger hovering above the screen. So with a mouse, I can point to something and hover it, and then I can later decide to click something. But with touch, when I touch the screen, I'm pointing at it and clicking at the same time. And so things like hover menus on websites often aren't the easiest to use with touch. So in IE11, we implemented a feature that allows users to get access to these using simulated hover. So users can tap something to click it, or they can press and hold to apply hover. And this gives them access to hover menus across lots of websites. But what we know from talking with users is the best thing that you can do on your site to improve the touch experience is to avoid hiding content behind hover altogether. Another great little trick for improving how users use touch on your site is to take advantage of descriptive HTML5 input types. So when you have a form on your site, you can specify the type of data you expect to receive, and IE will provide you a custom tailored keyboard layout for the type of input that they're going to give. So let's take a look at what I mean by that. So this is an example site that I've built. It's just a simple blog. And you'll notice a few things on this site that we can improve so that touch works more confidently. The first thing is that at the top of the screen, there's a search field. And this button, the search button at the top, is pretty tiny. And while I can surely tap that, it doesn't meet that 40-pixel minimum, and some users are going to have difficulty. So let's make a quick adjustment. I'll flip over to my CSS. Add a simple search button selector with a minimum width of 40 pixels. Simple change. Negligible difference in my layout on my page, but a huge difference and a huge win for touch users. Now, this is just one button, and it's a very simple and contrived example. But take this to heart and look through your site. Spend time touching it on devices and figure out where you can improve the touchability. Another place in the site that is ripe for opportunity is this form at the bottom. So, as I mentioned before, when you tap into fields, you can get a standard QWERTY keyboard. And you see I get the same keyboard whether I'm in the name field or the email field. If I flip over to my markup, you'll see I have two input types of text. And I can instead, for email, switch this over to an email type. Now, there are lots of different types. There's telephone numbers. So by switching this, you can refresh the page. Tapping in the name field gets you the QWERTY keyboard as we expected. But when I switch to email, I get extra buttons that are useful for an email address, like an @, a .com button, an underscore, a dash. Simple change, big win for touch users. Another great way to improve your touch experience is to actually write less code. Use native scrolling and zooming whenever possible. We find actually that sometimes sites will handle touch input and move content themselves. And while that works, and IE11 has the fastest JavaScript engine out there right now, the best experience and the best taking advantage of the hardware is to use native panning and zooming. In IE10, we built a hardware-accelerated pipeline that has industry-leading panning and zooming performance. And in IE11, we're taking that same technology, and we're actually bringing it to mouse wheels, touch pads, keyboards, and even JavaScript. And when you do this, you'll get tremendously better experience. So let's take a little bit of a demo on that. So here, embedded in my blog post, I have an image. And this isn't just an image. It's actually a photo gallery. And I can swipe through this photo gallery with my finger. And this is taking advantage of some CSS APIs introduced in IE10 that allow you to build snap points to build a photo gallery experience like this. So what I mean by that is, if you'll notice, if I pan it to the middle here in between two images and I let go, it snaps back to one of the edges. And all this is running on the GPU, it's smooth, your JavaScript can spin in a wild true loop, and it stays sticking to your finger no matter what. So same code, this works in IE10 with touch, same code, and in IE11 I can use my mouse wheel or my keyboard and flip through this image gallery experience, and it just lights up automatically. So since this is still pretty new to the web, let's take a look at what the code is. So back to the markup. You'll find I just have four images inside of a div. Very simple. I have a class of photo gallery here. So let's take a look at the CSS. In the CSS, you'll find I've made the images 100% width, and I've specified that the div should scroll in the x direction, but not in the y. Then, here's where the magic happens. With just a few lines of CSS, I start with the scroll snap points. I'm specifying some snap points along the horizontal direction. And I could actually specify a list of different arbitrary points. But in this case, since all my images are the same size, I'm using an interval. And so this interval starts at 0 pixels, or the leftmost edge here. And it repeats every 100% width. So every image, I've created a snap point. The next rule is the snap type. For this case, I've specified it's mandatory, that whenever the user lifts their finger or releases the button or mouse wheel, it must snap to one of these snap points. I can't stop it in the middle. There's an alternative value for this that's called proximity, which means if I'm close, the browser will snap it and clean it up. If I'm not, it'll leave it where the user left it. Next, for my particular design style, I decided that I didn't want a scroll bar or a panning indicator. So I've used the overflow style property to actually hide that. Simple enough. And the final rule here is the chaining rule. And this simply means that when the user reaches the end of the photo gallery, you don't start scrolling the rest of the page. So scrolling inside of the photo gallery only scrolls the photo gallery. So this markup works in IE10 and IE11 and lights up in IE11 for additional devices. So I also mentioned that you can take advantage of our hardware-accelerated scrolling and zooming through JavaScript. So let's take a look at a place that we can put that in the site. You'll notice I have a button up here in the top right corner that says Jump to Comments. This button simply calls an API we're all pretty familiar with called Scroll To. I click it, and it jumps straight to the bottom where the comment field is. Now, in IE11, we're introducing a new API called Zoom To. Let's take a look at how we can change the site to take advantage of that. Flipping over to the JavaScript, there's my scroll to command. I just simply scroll to the comment's offset position. Simple enough. Let's take a look at the snippet for Zoom To. So the first step is an important one, which is to feature detect. I look for the presence of the Zoom To API, and if it's not there, I fall back to the scroll to code I was already using. When it is available, however, I call the MS Zoom To API, and I pass in an object with a dictionary of how to perform the zoom and pan. So let's break this down a little bit. The first two properties that I've passed in here are content X and content Y. These are simply a location in the document. The next two properties are viewport X and viewport Y. And this is how the viewport, or the screen, aligns to that point in the document. So here I've actually used simple keywords that says that point should be aligned to the bottom left corner. And then final property is the scale factor. This lets me apply a little bit of zoom. I'm going to bump this up a little bit to 1.5 or 150% zoom. So I've saved it. We'll refresh the page. And now when I tap jump to comments, you'll see you get a nice, smooth, animated pan and zoom right down to the comments. This is a pretty cool experience with just a few lines of JavaScript. So when your site works well across input devices, another factor to think about in the increasingly diverse set of devices is the screen. Screens range from 4-inch phones to your new 8-inch tablets to 30-inch desktops or even 70-inch Xbox screens. And the device landscape keeps changing and increasing. So developers have been thinking about things like responsive web design for years, but this landscape, coupled with the improved snap behavior in Windows 8.1, where you can run two apps side by side and the user can freely resize them to just about any size, and that can include two different sites, means that responsive web design has never been more important. So, what are the tools available to you in the browser to do this? First, you need to understand that modern browsers today will often apply a scale to your site to try to fit it to the device size that it's being rendered in. And this makes the most of the web work pretty well. But when you're doing responsive web design, you need to take control of that scaling yourself and adapt your layout to fit the page. And I'll show you a little bit of an example of that in just a second. So once you've taken advantage of scaling using CSS device adaptation, or the @MS viewport tag, then you can use traditional adaptive layout techniques like media queries, Flexbox, and other APIs to make your content relayout or adapt depending on the size that it's rendered in. This graph here is actually an analysis of how a particular website's media query breakpoints performs across a variety of different screen sizes. You can produce this graph yourself. You can go to www.modern.ie, which there's a link at the end of the slide, and you just plug in your URL, and it will analyze the media queries in your site and spit out this graph to give you an estimate at least of how your media queries are performing across different screen sizes. Across the bottom of this graph, and listed here as well in text, are some common sizes that it's worth testing at to ensure that your site works well no matter what kind of device a user is using to browse it. So let's take a look at this in our site. So when I take this website, and I snap it over to the side, you'll see the scaling that I'm talking about. The web page fits into the content, and everything looks reasonably well. But let's shrink this down further. As I go smaller, I've just got too much content. It's cluttered. I can't read it. So the first step is to take advantage of that, take control of that scaling. So let's look at the code. Flipping back to my CSS, I'll use CSS device adaptation, or MS viewport, and I'm going to specify the most, probably the simplest rule that you can, which is that the width should be the device width. This effectively means don't scale my site. Now, there are more complex rules that you can build that help you scale your site in some certain circumstances, or you can combine it with media queries to change how it scales at different sizes. But for this example, we're going to keep it simple and just turn off scaling altogether. The next thing is I'm going to move to using media queries to adapt my layout on different screen sizes. So I've identified a set of rules that are affecting how my site scales across different widths. And the way I did that was actually pretty simple. I just sat here and I resized the browser. And what I see is that it works pretty well, actually. I'm using percentage widths and things like this, so it does a pretty good job. As I get lower than 750 pixels, you start to see that content wraps, it's covering up things, the margins are too big, and some of my layout's just plain broken. So What I'll do is I'll go back to the CSS, and I'll use a media query to say that these particular rules are only going to apply on widths of at least 750 pixels. And I've prepared some alternate values for other screen sizes, including breakpoints at between 550 pixels and 750 pixels, and below 550 pixels. How you choose to divide your breakpoints is up to you and a little bit dependent on the layout of your site. And there's no real magical set of numbers that you should be using. What you need to do is to test. You need to test at these different screen sizes mentioned in the slide. So once that I've taken control of the scrolling, and I've specified some media queries to change my layout at different sizes, let's try the site again. Now, when I snap the browser to the side, you'll see that it didn't scale. The text size stayed the same, and it's still readable, and it's looking good. And now as we shrink it, we hit the first media query. And the first media query takes off a few things. I took off the search box at the top to allow room for the masthead. And I've also repositioned the jump to comments button to float over to the left. As I go smaller, we'll transition into the other media query. And here I've chosen to make my site just go into a simple reading view. And I've gotten rid of my masthead at the top. I've actually eliminated the margins. I've inlined the image so that text doesn't wrap around it. And I've adjusted how the comment field lays out at the bottom. These are some pretty minor adjustments, but it makes this work well, not just at different snap sizes in Windows, but also on other screen widths like phones and other devices. Another important layout consideration with new devices is how fixed elements behave under Zoom. So Zoom wasn't a commonplace, really, until touch came around. And it has some interesting behavior with respect to fixed position elements. So I'm going to start out to demonstrate that by actually showing a different site. This site here uses a few fixed position elements as well as non-fixed content. So two of which are the yellow capsule with the person inside and the orange depth meter off to the left. As I pan the page, you see that those two elements stay fixed on the screen, and it's using composition with non-fixed elements to produce the effect of the capsule going through this tube. So this site was actually designed well before touch was prevalent as it is today. And so it makes some certain assumptions about how this web page would be laid out. In particular, it's assuming how the fixed elements will align to the non-fixed content. So it's important that when I zoom in, that alignment stays preserved. We spent a lot of time in IE10 making sure that this was compatible and worked well across sites. And I challenge you to try other browsers. It's not quite as great. But it's really important. This is a simple example, but there's a lot of websites that if this guarantee of alignment doesn't happen, they break. So that's great. But let's think to our demo site here, where I have a fixed element at the top. Here I'm using a masthead toolbar. And as I zoom in, sure enough, the alignment stays just as I just showed you. But in this scenario, I'm not counting on it being aligned. Actually, what I probably want is this content to stay visible on the screen at all times. So in IE11, we're introducing a new positioning property called device fixed. And what device fixed lets you do is keep it exactly fixed to the screen rather than aligned with the non-fixed content in the page. Let's take a look at that. So back in my CSS, I'll find the header and its position fixed. I'm going to leave position fixed for backwards compatibility, and I'm going to add device fixed. One line in my CSS, we'll refresh the page, and as I pan, it behaves just like before, staying fixed at the top. But now as I zoom in, it stays on the screen and doesn't fly off. And this is okay because I don't care about the alignment. So use fixed positioning when you care about how it's positioned relative to non-fixed elements, and use device fixed positioning when you care about how it's positioned on the screen. When you have a site that works well across a variety of input devices and is perfect for touch and lays out nicely across different screen sizes, users have more fun and enjoy using your site better. And another way that you can ensure that is to actually take advantage of the opportunities in Windows to integrate into how they use your site on Windows. And that's what I refer to as lighting up your Windows experience. And the great place to start that is in the start screen. And in Windows 8, we introduced the ability for sites to be pinned to the start screen. And developers could supply some simple markup that says, here's an image that I want you to put on this tile, and here's the color of the tile. In 8.1, we're improving that so that, with no change, providing the tile image, when the user pins the site, we're going to take your branding and put it in more places in our UI. We believe that the content of your site is more important than our browser Chrome, and so we're going to put your high-res imagery in the address bar, in the search suggestions, in the frequent sites, and favorite sites, and as well as on the start screen if the user pins it. So let's add a pin site to our demo. Flipping over to the HTML, you'll see I actually already have the elements necessary to produce an image and a particular color on Windows 8. Now we're introducing additional elements that let you take advantage of the new tile sizes in 8.1. There are four different tile sizes. There's a small square tile, a medium square tile, a wide tile, and a large square tile. And so I've provided images for each of these. And as you can see on my start screen, I actually have examples of these. I've pinned MSN here in the large tile size, and I have our Contoso blog example in the wide, as well as small, medium, or large. So a few lines of HTML, some additional images, and now users can put your site next to all the other things that they use on a daily basis. But perhaps my favorite improvement to pin sites in 8.1 is the addition of live tile notification support for sites. We're using the same XML schema available to apps for websites with a simple meta tag that lets you point to the XML file that provides the notification update. And so if you have an app, you can actually share code between your app and site. But we're actually making it even easier to take an RSS feed, for example, and use a service through buildmypinsite.com to light up that live tile notification automatically. This is an example of what the XML looks like that comes over the wire for an update. There's a number of different templates you can choose from, same templates as available for apps. And it's very simple. This one here is is called the Tile-Wide Peak Image Collection. I've got a series of images, as well as a headline and some additional text below it. It's very simple. So let's add a live tile. I'm going to use Build My Pin Site. There we go. And I'll start out by saying the title that I want on my tile. I'll pick a color. And I'm going to upload an image. I'm going to choose my site's logo. Once it's uploaded, the site lets me crop this image into the different tile sizes that I just showed you. So we'll pick first the small size. Everybody knows the Contoso C. And the medium, a wide one, and of course, the large. I click Next. And all the while, I'm seeing a preview on the right side of what it will look like. Next, I'm going to use my RSS feed. For this, I'll actually take the IE blog. I'll copy a link from the RSS feed. Flip back to build my pin site. Paste it in. And click Git feed. Out pops the code. All I have to do is I can download this package and upload it to my site. And I'll have all the different tile sizes, as well as a service that provides updates from your RSS feed as notifications on the tile. For this demo, I'm not going to trust the Wi-Fi. So I'm going to use a local update. And you can actually already see, it's pulled it here, there's a nice little banner that pops up at the bottom that has the title of the latest blog post available on my site. So use your RSS feed through buildmypinsite.com, or use your own custom XML to provide notifications on the live tile. Another great way to integrate into how users use Windows is to influence what they share. So Windows 8 and 8.1 have a share charm that allow them to share content from any app or site. And through the power of Bing, we'll pick relevant content, the title and dominant images from the page, for them to share. But as a developer, you can influence what they share through some simple markup. This is standard Open Graph markup. You pull from the title of your web page, a meta description tag. Here I've chosen to use the blog title again, and an image, or multiple images, for the user to share from your site. For example, in my demo site, I might choose some of the images from my photo gallery. The immersive experience of IE10 and 11 introduced swiping to navigate forward and back in the browser. And we've done work in IE11 to make that even faster, as well as allow you to take advantage of pre-rendering and flip ahead to build paginated experiences on your site. So let's take a look at what I mean by that. I have my blog post, but I also have a second article that I want users to be able to go to. So this might be page 1 and page 2, for example, of the post. So using markup that's already commonly used for things like search engine optimization, I can point the browser at the next page. I have a link tag with a rel attribute of next, and it points to article 2. I've also included an additional tag that says pre-render this content, which enables it to be faster and more fluid when they just swipe forward or click the forward button. Now when I refresh the page, you'll notice I haven't navigated anywhere, but the forward button's lit up. And that's indicating that Flip Ahead is available on this site, and I can swipe forward to part 2. Likewise, I can actually include markup on the second page that points to the previous article so that the user can just swipe back. And you notice they're browsing your site, and they're going from page to page, and you never even see our UI pop up. You can just swipe right through. So here's the markup for the second page. It looks just like the first one, but I'm pointing to the previous page. So you can make users enjoy browsing your website more by making it work well across different input devices, using things like pointer events and native hardware accelerated panning and zooming, providing a nice compatible touch-friendly experience, and adapting to different screen sizes and browser widths using a device adaptation and media queries. And you can integrate into how they use their device on a daily basis through things like Flip Ahead, live tiles, different pin site sizes, as well as influencing how they share. All of these things that I've shown you today have guidance and tools available to you at modern.ie. If you haven't checked it out, go over there today, plug in your website, and see how you're doing. It'll provide a number of different assessments on things ranging from compatibility to these features I mentioned here, and get you the tips and tricks and code to go build this experience. There's also the IE 11 developer guide available on MSDN, and of course, Build My Pin Site with the service for providing live tile notifications. So with that, I'm going to leave the floor open for questions. And you can come up here afterwards if you don't want to shout out in front of everybody. So, yes? Yeah, so the page is not completely loaded. It's partially loaded up to basically as far as we can, including downloading image resources and other content like that, parsing markup and things like that. You won't see things like video playing or ActiveX controls loading or anything like that. I believe so. And most analytics websites have already done the adaptation for pre-render. If you follow me afterwards, I can give you more information on the details of that. Yeah. Yes? I can't hear you. Do we have a microphone? Yes, so the Zoom2 API? The question was, is the Zoom2 API available in apps as well? Yes, it is. Yeah. How do you what? I'm not positive on the answer to that, but if you catch me afterwards, I can help you find the person who does. Yes? So Windows 8.1 introduced live tile notifications, and on Windows 8, the markup will get ignored, but you can still have your tile image in color. Great. Thanks for coming.